Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. The show you're about to hear originally aired on Saturday, August 5th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show 271.
August 5th, 2006.
Right now, it's 74 in Anaheim, 72 in Newport Beach, 79 in Hollywood, and it's 71 in Encino. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. 11:06, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. We talk about anything having to do with technology. So, of course, computers and the internet, but also cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players. And before you take your TV set in for a $500 repair, you should probably call me for that, too. I can't fix it, but I could probably stop you from spending that money. You can talk about home theater, big screen TVs, anything with a chip in it. Even biotech, which isn't exactly a chip, although we did an interview on the biotech podcast I did this week. It'll air in a couple of weeks with a scientist at MIT who is making simulated organs using biology. They've got cells, liver cells, but they also have it's in a contraption that computer-based contraption that allows, it's in effect, it acts like a liver so that they can do testing, drug testing and so forth, without actually having to use a real organ. It's pretty, so the merging of biology and technology is very clear. I asked her, how long before we see, you know, Matrix-style sockets in our head? And she said, not long. In fact, there's a lot of research now on artificial limbs that are interfaced, in fact, they work very well, interfaced to the mind's neurons. So you control them by thinking, just as we do real limbs. We're getting close. It is an amazing world we live in. And that's the subjects we talk about. The changing world thanks to technology. I mentioned to Bill that the big hacker convention is going on this weekend in Las Vegas, DEF CON. It's actually clever the way they do it. There's a kind of expensive convention right before it called Black Hat. And I think it's $1,000 or something. I mean, it's a really expensive conference that professional security experts go to, the big shots, and, you know, law enforcement. And it's an expensive professional conference and a lot of interesting demonstrations. In fact, there's one I'll tell you about in just a second. But since everybody's there, they kind of have this cheap $100 conference the following day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, called DEF CON. And everybody who is interested in this stuff can go because it's inexpensive. And they have barbecues and they call it the toxic barbecue. They have a lot of contests and fun. They have a wall of shame where people who have been hacked, their data is put up there on the wall, wall of shame. You don't want to go to one of these things with a Wi-Fi adapter because you will get hacked. You will get hacked. I don't care how secure you think you are. So, and then they have conferences of all sorts of interesting stuff. And many of the people who are there for their Black Hat demos just stick around and do the same demo for the cheap seats, which I think is great. I have many friends who go to these things, but I have yet to actually go myself. There was a seminar on Friday called War Rocketing. Now, we've talked about war driving before. That's where you walk or drive around looking for Wi-Fi access points, open Wi-Fi access points. So this guy, Rick Hill, has built a war rocket. It's called War Rocketing. He designed, launched, and recovered a rocket whose objective is to discover open Wi-Fi access points over a 50 square mile area in less than a minute. And because trees and houses and hills don't get in the way, essentially you get everything. He used a 1/3 scale model Nike smoke rocket, and he actually launched this with software in it, obviously, and was able to make a map of open, where actually all access points in a 50 square mile area. Now, see, this is the kind of hacking that people do for fun. Probably doesn't have a huge amount of practical value, but it's kind of interesting. Something you might be a little more interested in was a demonstration at Black Hat. And it essentially hacked a stock MacBook by getting in through the wireless connection. And it's a little scary. They said, look, it's the same problem on almost all Wi-Fi adapters, Mac or Windows, but we thought we'd attack a MacBook because Mac users are so smug about their security. Okay. So what they did, and they did it in just a few minutes, is they used a well-known, well, maybe not well-known, they used known to them flaws in the wireless security, in the drivers for wireless security. David Maynor and John Ellich, who are security experts. By the way, there's a very blurred line between hacker and security expert at these events. They're all hackers and they're all security experts, essentially. Now, the problem with the demo is that they didn't, and I understand their desire to be responsible, they didn't want people to really know how they did it. So they didn't actually do it. They showed a video of them doing it, which is very hard to validate. But they said they used a weakness in wireless drivers in general. They've been able to get control of MacBooks, Linux, and Windows laptops. Essentially, the idea is if you go anywhere outside with your laptop, you've got the Wi-Fi turned on, the people who know this hack can get in to your system and access it through your wireless port, if it's configured as by default. Now, we don't know a lot about how they did it. We don't even really know exactly how, if it's doable. Mac fanatics are saying, hold on just a second here. They had to use a third-party wireless card in a MacBook, which is something nobody would do since it comes with its own built-in Wi-Fi. But I'm not sure that that's true. So it's kind of tough to know. I guess the point, though, I think is really well important to make, is that all software has problems. All software has bugs. And as hackers find these bugs and exploit them, they can sometimes use them to hack into your system. And it now looks like there's some real issues with wireless networking. I don't know if it's a coincidence, but Intel, right after this demo, released a patch to its wireless drivers that they claim fixes a major security hole. I suspect that these guys contacted Intel, and Intel shipped a fix. Now, that won't fix the problem with other cards, and I would hope that the manufacturers of other chipsets, like the Atheros, which I think is what the Mac uses, and other chipsets, the Ergo, will fix theirs too. But it's something to be aware of. I don't know what to tell you about protecting yourself, because we don't really know exactly how it was done, but it does sound like there is some risk going out into the world with your Wi-Fi turned on. Of course, you turn off the Wi-Fi, you're safe. I think. It's hard to say, not knowing how they did it. We talked a little bit about Vista security this week on my security podcast, Security Now. Steve Gibson, who does the show with me. In fact, I'm going to try to get Steve on the show tomorrow. Talked a little bit about Vista. Now, Vista, of course, is the next version of Microsoft Windows, which comes out later this year to business and then to the rest of us early next year. And Microsoft has saying, as it said about XP, that this will be the most secure version of Windows ever. And certainly everybody hopes so. And there's a lot of burden on Microsoft to make Windows secure. They took them about 5 years to get XP kind of locked down. Nobody's willing to go through another 5 years with a new operating system and the kinds of security holes that we've discovered in XP. But Steve and Symantec, Steve's actually quoting a Symantec report are a little worried because Vista's networking software has been rewritten from scratch. Now, normally you'd say, well, that's a good thing, right? They'll learn, take all the lessons they've learned. They'll fix all the problems. It'll be a much better networking stack. It'll work better. It turns out in the real world that a mature, well-known networking stack is safer because all the bugs have been banged out of it. The question is, can you write a new one from scratch that fixes all those problems, has no bugs? And boy, the evidence is you can't. According to the Symantec report, there were problems in the new Vista network stack that had been fixed in Windows 95. You could create a blue screen of death very simply in Windows 95. They fixed it using a very simple kind of loopback call, and the same problem is now found in the Windows Vista stack. Microsoft at Black Hat said, we're going to give 2,000 of you hardest core hackers, the toughest guys, we're going to give you some special access to Windows Vista. We want you to break it. We want you to find the holes before we ship it. Microsoft was at Black Hat. They gave a full day of briefings on Vista and how the network security has changed and how it's a safer operating system. And they gave out copies of Vista to the hackers saying, prove us wrong. We want to find out what's wrong here. He says, Andrew Cushman is director of Microsoft Security Response Engineering and Outreach, said he was talking at Black Hat. Past advice from security researchers and hackers helped set the company straight. And we ask your help again. Well, I hope that's the case. because so far what we've seen from Vista is not encouraging. I'll certainly talk about this as Vista gets closer. So, this is one issue that's going to be a big one for Vista. Everybody's eyes are on Microsoft, including all the hackers who would love to be able to use Vista to get into Vista as easily as they get into XP. Maybe even easier. And that's what's scary. We'll talk about that. Anything else you want to talk about? 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
The Jesus Christ Show.
How do you get faith?
Here? It doesn't look like
you don't get faith. Faith
DSL.
Just is.
Oh,
you
DSL,
use
okay.
Faith every day, Karen, in everything you do.
And so what do I do?
You give it to me, and you make yourself second to me.
The Jesus Christ Show, tomorrow, 6 to 9, on AM 640, online and on demand. KFI, AM640.com.
High-speed internet, it's something everybody deserves, and DSL Extreme is doing their darndest to make sure everybody can afford it with the lowest price for DSL in the country. $12.95 a month for high-speed internet. You can get rid of that second phone line. You don't need it with DSL. You get free spam protection, antivirus protection. There's no setup fee. The modem is free. 24-hour free local tech support. Unlike a lot of these other offers, there's no other services to sign up for. And the price is guaranteed for a year. Now, that's a deal. $12.95 a month. Call 866-2-GET-NET. I want to tell you, I use DSL Extreme. I'm very happy with it. I'm using it right now. They are my internet service provider. And I encourage anybody who's looking to go high speed or to save money on their high speed access to call 866-2-GET-NET, 866-2-GET-NET. You can also go online at dslextreme.com. Some restrictions apply. It's not available in all areas, but in most areas. If you can hear me, you probably can get it. But find out now by calling 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme.
This is Steve Gregory along the U.S.-Mexico border. Join me Monday morning for my special report on guarding the border.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. The chat room is live and happening right now at irc.dslextreme.com. And, of course, the show notes are online at leo.am. Charles, Los Angeles, welcome.
Hi, Leo.
To KFI.
I want to buy a MacBook, but I'm a little confused because there's so many. There's like three of them, and then there's the MacBook Pro. And it's mostly for, I want to do music, Logic and GarageBand 3 and all that kind of stuff. Which one? There's one for $10.99. It's got a 1.83 gigahertz processor.
Yeah, easiest way to look at the lineup is to go to Apple's store, store.apple.com. Doesn't mean you have to buy it there, but just that'll give you a better idea. There really are two different main lines. There's a MacBook and the MacBook Pro.
Right.
The MacBook Pro has a faster video card and a larger screen, and that's the biggest difference.
Oh.
The MacBook has two different processor speeds, but the high-end MacBook has the same speed processor as the MacBook Pro. Now, all this may change. You know, Apple's got a conference on Monday. Steve Jobs is giving a keynote at that conference, the Worldwide Developers Conference. I wouldn't be at all surprised to hear Steve announce an upgrade to the MacBooks, probably the MacBook Pro, to use this new Core 2 chip.
Huh.
So we don't know, of course, and there are a lot of rumors about what Steve will announce, including an iPod phone, a new iPod. But I think most likely, because he's talking to developers, he's going to talk about, and we've been waiting for these, the higher-end Mac desktops. But I wouldn't be surprised to hear him say, oh, and by the way, we're going to also upgrade the MacBook Pro to the Merom chip. That's the Core 2 chip.
Oh.
So if you want a lot of power, the new MacBook Pros will give you that power, but at a premium. They'll be $1,000 more. I have a MacBook, and I'm very happy with it.
Huh.
I don't think you need to spend a lot of money to do what you want to do. What you will want to do is put more RAM in.
Right.
And I wouldn't use the Apple RAM because they overcharge you for that. You can go out and go to Newegg or any. I bought mine from Newegg, but there are a lot of different places selling Apple-compatible RAM.
Right.
And at least a gigabyte. If you think you might want to run Windows on it, then get 2 gigabytes.
My main question is there much of a difference between a 1.83 gigahertz and 2.16? There's a $200 difference in the MacBooks, you know?
Yeah, not that you'd noticed, probably.
Oh, okay.
You're talking about the Pro, because the MacBook itself, which is the low end, only goes to 2 gigahertz.
Right.
But the Pro goes a little bit faster. And the biggest the biggest difference is not that speed of the processor. The biggest difference is the video card in it. The Pro has a much higher end video card and it's a bigger screen. But you're talking music, it's not going to make any difference at all.
Yeah, but for playing DVDs, I can still play DVDs on
absolutely. It looks great on the MacBook. The MacBook is a 1280 by 800 screen, which is slightly taller than you need to watch a DVD. So it looks great. I think it looks great. I bought a MacBook.
But won't I want the dual core 2 processor also?
You will. You might. I mean, that's the question. And you know what? I can't tell you if they're going to do it or even what the price will be. So you just have to see what happens on Monday. If they don't announce it on Monday, then I think, you know, and to be honest with you, the Core 2 is a lot faster. But you probably don't need it. Now, where you might is if you use a lot of tracks in Logic or GarageBand. And that's where you need a lot of processor and a lot of RAM. So
or if I get some plugins or something.
Yeah, that could start to use the speed. So what happens is it'll bog down a little bit if you're playing back more than, say, 8, 9, 10 tracks.
Yeah.
So it just depends on how complex your music is.
Okay.
What kind of music do you make?
I do like jazz and like hip hop. I was the guy I called about a month ago, you know, white man rapping. I had
But
I do all kinds of stuff.
I think you'd be happy with the MacBook, but if you've got the money, watch and see what happens on Monday with the MacBook Pro. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1129. Deborah Marks in the KFI News Center.
John Ziegler, evenings right after John and Ken, 7 to 10.
KFI, AM 640.
1137 KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Never buy a Mac or Apple product the day before a conference. That's just, I mean, good advice. Steve may not say anything at all. I mean, he may, one thing we know, the only thing we know he's going to do is he's going to show Leopard, which is the new Apple operating system. It won't be out for a while, but he'll show us some features of Leopard, but I don't expect to see anything else for some time. On the other hand, you never know. They promised that before the end of the year, they would ship desktops with Intel chips. They have not yet done desktops with Intel chips, only the laptops and the Mini. I guess the Mini's a desktop, but I mean the power desktops and the iMac's a desktop. Okay, I'm sorry. I take it back. The high-end machines. And I think they were waiting. I mean, I think it's very clear they were waiting. They knew, of course, Intel is a partner. They knew that Intel was coming up with a very, very good chip, and there was no reason to release the high-end desktops until this chip came out. Well, the chip's out. The Core 2. And I think it's... It seems to me very likely that on Monday, Apple will announce... That's my prediction. Tower computers with the Core 2. I think they'll announce a single chip low end, but the focus will be on a dual chip, which will essentially give you four processors, a quad machine. And there's some evidence that they may do a four chip tower, which would be an eight-way machine. OS X, their operating system, is capable of handling eight processors simultaneously. Now, this isn't for you and me. I'm not going to try to get Bill Handel or Marjorie, his wife, to buy this one. It'll be 10 grand, but it'll be a lot. The kind of power that the movie studios at Pixar and others who use Macintoshes to do their 3D renderings are craving. And 10 grand to them is very cheap. So I fully expect we will see, if not right away, I think by the end of the year, we'll see quad Core 2s. And that will be the fastest machine out there, I think, bar none. I would, and now, at the same time as they came out with these Core 2 chips for desktops, Intel came out with a laptop version, the Merom. It's not available yet, I don't think. I don't think you can, I know you can't buy any computers, and I don't think any manufacturer is getting the chip yet. So it might be a little premature for Apple to say, in fact, it probably will be premature for Apple to say, yeah, we're going to do a Core 2 laptop. I think the MacBook Pro was destined, the Core 2 was destined for the MacBook Pro, mainly because there isn't much to distinguish right now, the MacBook and the MacBook Pro. Usually you have a bigger dividing line between your low-end product and your high-end product. There isn't really a big one this time. It's just the video card and the monitor. They need a better processor, too. So I suspect that we'll see that. But will we see it on Monday? I don't know. Hasn't been a new iPod in 8 months. Might be time for an iPod rev. As I said, the rumors are there'll be an iPod phone and a video iPod with a big touch screen. I'm not going to go in the business of predicting what Steve's going to do in that regard. That's too hard to figure out. But certainly something to watch on Monday, and we'll talk about it next week. Chad Anaheim, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hello, Chad.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Okay, question is, I've been a long-time user of Outlook Express 6, and I finally transferred over to Mozilla Thunderbird.
Good, I think a good move. Client.
Yeah, which I do like it a lot. I also have my antivirus, not 32, and I've been using that for about 2 years. The thing I have a problem with is I don't know if it's corresponding with my email.
Yeah.
So when I'm using the Thunderbird, if it's still checking for viruses.
Yes. It does work with Thunderbird, yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Because I tried to get into the preferences and I couldn't see anything where it was saying, you know, switch to another email client or something. So I was kind of worried about getting viruses or something.
No, I think it scans it on the way in, so I don't think it matters.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And another question for you, real quick. I don't know if you heard that Adelphia and Comcast got bought out by Time Warner.
I did.
Yeah. Is Time Warner, are they rated pretty high for their high speed?
You know, their Roadrunner service, I think, is very good. Yeah. It's hard. You know, I'll be honest. In fact, it's supposedly a lot, but Adelphia is usually the ones people complain most about.
Yeah, because I had Adelphia for like 2 years, and I never had a problem with them.
Yeah.
And they just switched over, I guess, like a couple days ago.
It ultimately doesn't really come down to the overall company, but that particular implementation in your neighborhood, you know?
Okay, great.
I think you'll be fine. Roadrunner is very good. In fact, it was one of the very first high-speed cable systems, and I think everybody who has it is very happy with it. The only one I've really ever heard complaints about are Adelphia, and you were happy with them, so I think you probably are.
Oh, yeah. I was getting 5 megs, and
yeah.
I never had a problem with them.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Leo. Well,
thanks for the call. Yeah, it's very competitive right now in high-speed internet, and you know, it used to be, you know, a company could get away with lousy service as a high-speed internet provider, but now you can't. Because there's the DSL Extremes of the world and all these other companies saying, well, you know, unhappy, we'll take care of you. No problem. We'll give you a better deal, too. So they've got to deliver. And Time Warner has always been, I think, a very good service. Carl on the line from North Carolina. Hello, Carl. Welcome to KFI.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask you about an MP3 player that I'd like to buy. that probably could make its own gravy if possible.
You've been listening to my gadget podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Here's the thing. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And take, for instance, Security Now.
Yeah.
And I'm about halfway through it, the Security Now podcast, and I have to turn it off because I got to do something else.
Right.
When I get around to turning it back on,
that's so frustrating.
Where do you think it starts?
Right at the beginning, yeah.
Do they make an MP3 player that when you turn it off, it stops it there, and when you turn it back on, it starts right where the MP where you just left off at?
Yeah, they do. It's called an iPod.
Oh, that's the only one, huh?
Well, there may be others, but the iPod definitely does it. I don't, you know, the truth is I stopped using other people's players a long time ago. So I'm not sure. Let's ask the audience if they know of other MP3 players, particularly with podcasts. Because, you know, with a song, it's not a big deal. You don't mind starting the song over. But if you're in a book or a podcast and it's a long one and you're halfway through, you don't want to have to fast forward it all the way back to where you were. You may not even remember.
That's where I'm running into the problem.
Right. The original players had bookmarks, you know, like the Diamond Rio had bookmarking capability, and that was the way they handled it. You would put a bookmark where you were, and then you could stop.
Mm-hmm.
So you might look and see if there's a bookmarking capability. I don't know. Let's ask in the chat room, and let's ask listeners. You understand what he wants. He wants to be able to listen to a podcast, stop it, turn off the player, and resume where he was before. An iPod does do that. But I don't know if the other players do. So keep listening. We'll find some that do.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening to our podcast. I appreciate it.
I love them both.
That's
in
great.
In fact, I bought SpinRite and donated to you, even though I have no use for SpinRite.
Well, you didn't have to do that, but that's very generous of you. Thank you.
Well, I think it's important to keep things. There's not. I don't know of any show like Security Now that is done in a podcast.
No, we're very proud of it, and Steve. All the credit to Steve Gibson.
That's probably the finest podcast going right now.
Well, you're very generous.
As far as being to teach you something.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing it. You know, one of the things I think I learned very early on is, broadcasters kind of have an aversion to educational and teaching, but I know that people like to learn something. And
I wish there was more like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you can give people some information and still be entertaining and do it in a light way, but if they learn something, I think people like to learn. It's a natural thing.
Take, for instance, when this new Vista comes out. I'm sure there could be a podcast that tells you how to, you know, really crank down the Vista to make it work correctly for you.
Well, I can tell you right now, not only will Steve be doing that, we're going to start focusing on Vista as soon as Vista settles. We don't want to
That's on Security, but I'm talking about the whole thing.
Yep. Well, I'm launching, you'll be glad to know, I'm launching a new podcast in about a month. It's going to be a countdown to Vista, and it's going to be all about Vista. It's one of the best guys in Windows today is doing it. He's on vacation right now, but when he comes back, so keep an eye on twit.tv. That's the network I run, and you'll see that we're doing a lot of very specific, narrow, niche-y stuff like that, where we focus on one topic. Podcasting's great for that. You couldn't do it on a radio show, but it's great for a podcast. Because if you're interested in security or interested in locking down Vista or tuning up Vista, you can do that. By the way, the chat room says that a number of players. We'll do that. The Rio Forge, the Palm OS handhelds. We'll do this, you know, resume when you play again. Dell DJ, the Creative Zen. I like the Creative Zens. Dell DJ is actually a very good one, too. The Rio Forge. Now, I'm not saying have his bookmarks. Now, they may not be understanding me completely. What he wants to do is just not bookmark it, but just stop and have it resume where it was. We'll look for more answers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:48.
Nighttime is the right time for John Ziegler. Monday night, 7 to 10. KFI, AM 640.
11:55. A KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. Dylan's on the line from Oklahoma City. Hello, Dylan. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Dylan.
I have a question about gigabit Ethernet. I'm kind of new to the whole idea, but I know that you can get 1,000 megabits per second transfer.
Yes.
Ethernet. I'm really not sure what's needed. Took two computers directly together.
I'm a fan of gigabit Ethernet, but I've only recently become a fan. You know, most new computers, all laptops come with it these days. And I always thought, who needs it? Because your internet isn't anywhere near that speed. You know, it might be 4 megabits or 5 megabits.
Yeah.
You're talking 1,000 megabits. Now, a couple of things to remember. First of all, that's my reaction. Woo! First of all, that's the nominal speed. And so you don't usually get performance that fast. But you get performance, you know, you can assume you're going to get performance of at least half of the nominal speed. So when you get the normal Ethernet, which is 10 megabits, we find in real life 5, 6, maybe 7 megabit performance, okay? 60% would be average. So 6 megabits, that's as fast as your fastest network, your internet connection. So regular 10 megabit Ethernet, the kind that everybody uses, kind of the bottom line Ethernet, is fine for internet access. But when you're connecting machines together, especially if you're copying files or, you know, you're playing games or whatever, often a faster connection really will benefit you. So there is 100 megabit Ethernet. And remember, this is bits, not bytes. So divide by 8 to get how many megabytes a second that is, right?
Yeah, I understand all that.
So you're talking 10 megabits is a little less than a megabyte a second. 100 megabits is a little less than 10 megabytes a second. Gigabit Ethernet, you're talking 100 megabytes a second. That's a lot of throughput. It's faster than probably your hard drive. Okay, so what you're saying is essentially, if you've got gigabit Ethernet between two computers, you're getting hard drive speed. It's as if that other computer is
local.
Exactly. So you do want it. In fact, I just recently upgraded. I know a little bit about it because I just recently upgraded my whole network to gigabit, including my router and my switches and, of course, all my network cards. To have it work, of course, you need gigabit Ethernet adapters in all your computers. It's a good idea. You can use your standard Cat5 cable, but it'd be a good idea to get a little bit better cable. They say Cat6 or 6E would be kind of indicated for gigabit. If you really want the full throughput, yeah, get a little bit better cable. Most of these are auto-sensing, so you don't have to worry about these, you know, the special cables to connect two computers together. You can just use any old cable. And, you know, you don't need to have a special terminated cable. And you just connect them, and then you do the standard file sharing. I use a gigabit Ethernet for backing up all my drives, and it's just so fast. I use it for moving. I move large video and audio files around, and they move around very instantaneously. Even my internet seems faster, but I know that can't be true. That's just my imagination. If you're getting a new machine, certainly make sure it has gigabit built in. Eventually, you'll want to at least upgrade to a gigabit switch so that you can connect your computers via gigabit. And if you only have a router, if you connect your computers via the router, you can get an inexpensive $100. I mean, they're more expensive than regular routers, but $100, say, for a gigabit router. And that will make sure everything can communicate at the full speed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:59. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
August 5th, 2006.
76 right now in Santa Ana, 81 in Huntington Beach, 75 in Glendale, and 75 in Santa Monica. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:07, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jessica. Good afternoon, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. The chat room is sizzling. Thanks to Dan and Dustin and Mike and Oliver and Sweeks, who are in there moderating and keeping it clean, keeping it happy. You can get in there and participate by visiting irc.dslextreme.com. And even if you don't have chat software, there's Java software right on there you can use. Although it'll work with any chat client as well. Details at irc.dslextreme.com. And let's see. Leo.am is where the show notes are. Or if it's easy to remember, just go to kfiam640.com. Under shows, click my name, Leo Laporte, and that's the official website link on that page. Takes you to Leo AM. Shubi taking the show notes this week. Thank you, Shubi. Back to the phones we go, and Vance is on the line from Chino Hills. Hello, Vance. Welcome to KFI.
Hey,
Hey, thanks, Leo. I have a question about nesting routers. My kids have the Nintendo DS, which can go wireless, but it only connects if it's WEP encrypted.
Yeah, that's frustrating, isn't it?
Are you able to nest a WEP strictly for the DS inside WPA router, which my computers would then connect to?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. You wouldn't want the WEP router to be connecting wirelessly to WPA router. What you would do is you would have two routers.
Right, that's what I'm looking
yes.
to do.
So you'd have two wireless routers hooked up. You'll have to have a third router. Actually, no, you don't have to have a third router. If the WPA router, which it will, I'm sure, has a hardwired port, that mm-hmm. hardwired port can then go off to an older WEP router. That will then support only the DSL, or right, I'm sorry, the DS Lite. So it would just be kind of a daisy chain. So from your cable modem or your DSL modem goes into your newer high quality router that does high quality WPA. It has a hardware port on it as well as a wireless port. Off the hardware port, then you can drive the second router. Now the key on the second router is to put it in what's called bridging mode. So that it's not assigning addresses to. You can, but it's probably best not. Just have it be a bridge. And that way it won't do any work. It just kind of passes it along. There are different ways this is described, unfortunately, in the setup. And this is really one of the big problems with routers. There's no consistency at all. I just bought a new router. And I had to figure out what their terminology was for all the stuff I was used to. So you'll have to figure out what bridging means. But essentially, it means turn off DHCP on that second router. Don't have it be assigning addresses. Let it pass through anything it gets to the main router, which will be doing all the address assignments.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And then one other quick question. When I upgrade to a new computer, I'm on Windows. I'm going to go Mac now that I'll be able to run both.
Yeah.
And I know Parallels runs a lot of the stuff. So until I can get money for all new apps, can I run all my Windows apps?
You sure can.
So
it works even with apps you might not expect. For instance, I have there's some scanning software I use called Neat Receipts that I really like. It scans in receipts. They don't make a Mac version. How do I run it? I run it on my Mac using Parallels. It's installed into the Windows portion of the Mac, and even though it's a USB scanner that only has Windows drivers, it works fine. Another example is the voice dictation software. There isn't really any good voice dictation software for the Mac. There's a pretty good one for Windows called Dragon Naturally Speaking. Version 9 just came out, and it's pretty good. I run it in Parallels, so I'm able to run it on the Mac as a Windows app. And the only ones that doesn't work with, of course, gaming, because you don't have the performance. First-person shooter gaming, you can play Tetris just fine. And then there may be applications that are very hardware-specific could conceivably have trouble. I haven't found any. And as I said, the stuff that uses USB ports and CD-ROMs and all that stuff works fine.
Right. I'm just looking for, like, my Photoshop and Dreamweaver.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Now, will it run as fast as it would on a native PC? There'll be a slight overhead. But remember, you're still Intel. So it's not like it's translating the instructions.
Yeah. Well, I'm running on a 3-year-old computer. So
it'll probably be faster because it's a Core 2. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to say, Parallels is a boon for me. I mean, I have Windows notebooks, and I don't carry them around anymore. I just carry my MacBook because I've got both now in one machine. That's a really nice way to do it, I think.
All right.
I have no complaints at all. Get a lot of RAM, as I mentioned before, because both operating systems are running at the same time. You need 2 gigabytes, enough for Mac and Parallels and Windows itself, and that's giving Windows a 512. Megabyte partition, which is, I think, enough. Unfortunately, the MacBooks can only go to 2 gigs. I suppose if you ran Photoshop in Windows, you would like to have a gigabyte. I think you could assign a gigabyte if you had 2 gigs to the Windows partition. You might do it to the detriment of some of your Mac applications, but I think that'd work fine. So give Windows partition a gig to make Photoshop happy. I've been very happy with it. It's a remarkably good solution. Jamie, Corona, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jamie.
Hi. I'm going to be working from home at least a few days a week, and I would like a recommendation for a machine that'll, like, fax and print and copy and scan.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of room either.
Yeah. I just bought one that is about as big as a refrigerator. But it's a great device, but it's also very expensive. Here's the decisions you're going to have to make. First of all, let's talk about printing. Do you want inkjet or laser?
Ink would be fine.
Ink's fine. That's, of course, a lot less expensive. And the nice thing about inkjet, you get color. The downside to inkjet, they're slightly slower. The quality's slightly lower than laser. And the ink is expensive. You know, you pay more per page. But if you're not doing a lot of printing, an inkjet's a good solution. The other issue is the faxing. The less expensive, if you're going to do a lot of faxing, the less expensive ones use your PC as the, and a fax modem as the fax. They don't really have built-in faxing. The scanner connects to the PC. And then the PC does the faxing. So faxing is important. You might want to look for one that does that has built-in fax capabilities. And that that costs you a little more.
It's supplied by my company. Where could I look to see if it's got a fax?
I always send people. There's no way when people want a printer review from me, I have to always disclaim. There's no way I can test all of these, right? There's hundreds of them. And that's a full-time job. So I always send people to PC Magazine, PCMag.com.
Okay.
They have, I know their printer reviewer is great, David Stone. He's wonderful. He's very reliable, and he knows his stuff, and they do the roundups. They can afford to get every all-in-one, what you want is called an all-in-one.
Yeah.
They can afford to get every all-in-one in and test them all and give you a recommendation. So when I bought my all-in-one, I followed their recommendations because I know that they're very reliable when it comes to that. So they like the Brother laser. I think they like the Canon all-in-ones for inkjet. But I certainly would look at their reviews for the specific capabilities that you're looking for.
No, I'll go there.
And so you said faxing is important?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's something to absolutely look at. I think that the Canon Pixma was one they liked. And it does, in fact, have a standalone fax. So it would be a good choice. And it's very reasonable. It's $250 to $310, they say.
Oh, okay.
So, and I have a Canon Pixma printer. It's an excellent photo printer. Now, the bad thing about this one is it's not networkable. So you have to connect
I don't need
you
that.
Don't care about that. Okay, so
no.
These are the things you have to weigh all these different issues. But they're very good about giving you the specifics. So it's a USB connection. It's an inkjet. I know the printer engine very well because I do love the Canon Pixma engines, and I've recommended those as a good photo printer. And boy, I mean, you're talking around $250 to $300 bucks. That's a good price.
And how much more are the laser?
I spent $800 on mine, and again, it's huge. Yeah. I mean, it's big, but it does very good looking. I mean, you can get less. The Brothers are less. This one I got because it's a very good sheet feeding scanner. So if you wanted to scan, you know, a 30-page or 100-page document, it'd be very easy to do. It's a very fast, high-quality printer. It was an editor's choice. I would, you know, essentially what I do is go to their, we'll put a link to their multifunction printer reviews, but I would essentially say get an editor's choice. And any one of their editor's choices you'll be happy about. But they're very good about talking about the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
okay.
and
you said,
do watch the size because most of these are fairly big. They have to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said PCMagazine.com?
PCMAG.com.
Okay. I'll go there.
Yeah, I think you'll be... I always send people there. I think you'll be very happy. They know their stuff.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I thank you for the call. Yeah, good luck.
Bye.
Yeah, I have resisted for a long time all-in-one printers. The idea of all-in-one kind of bothers me because in the past, it's always been a compromise, right? You get three things. You get a scanner, you get a printer, and you get a fax machine, but actually four if you include a copier. I mean, anything with a scanner and a printer is kind of a copier, right? You scan and print. And in the past, you've had to make compromises. Not the best scanner, not the best printer, but they've gotten really good, and the prices have gotten very low. And I have to say, I was seduced by this Epson. It was about $800, but it's a color laser. And I somebody like me who's been around for a while, when you look at a color laser for $800, and you get a very good scanner. I love the Epson scanners. I use an Epson scanner, and it's a great color copier. And that it's hard not to. I mean, that sounds expensive, but boy, it's hard. You go, wow, that's an amazing price given how much it would have cost $5,000 a couple of years ago. I got an AccuLaser, just if you're curious, an AccuLaser CX11. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1218.
Hate that behind the eight ball Monday morning feeling? Stay in the loop all weekend long. More stimulating weekends.
KFI AM 640.
1224, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. A reminder that the Podcast Expo is coming up in Ontario, the Ontario Convention Center, September 29th and 30th. I'll be giving a keynote. And also, we'll be doing a special podcast that afternoon, a Twit special interviewing podcasters. We did the show, the radio show from there last year, and I just decided not to do that again this year because a number of people said, yeah, you break format. People like the calls on the radio show. They want to hear people calling in and talking, and it's true. So I'm not going to break format. We'll just keep doing this, but if you do want to come to Podcast Expo, it's in town, September 29th, podcastexpo.com, and that'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I always accept these invitations to speak gladly, and I love to do it until about 2 weeks beforehand, and I think, oh, I actually have to say something. I have to write a speech. I'm giving a talk on the Geek Cruise. We're doing a Geek Cruise Chess Moves 2. It's a chess cruise, chess and Photoshop cruise to Alaska in a couple of weeks. And I'm just, you know, I just realized yesterday, oh, I said I'd give a talk on the history of chess playing machines. Better get going. Last minute Leo. But I have to say, it's a fascinating subject, and I have been doing research, and there's some very good books on machine intelligence and the history of machine intelligence. And, of course, very early on, the earliest artificial intelligence machines were chess-playing machines. That's always been kind of the first test of an intelligent machine. Can it play chess? Going back to the 18th century, when somebody built an automaton, which was the state-of-the-art in technology in those days, these mechanical devices called the Turk that played chess. Although it turned out there was a little chess master inside. They had the automaton part down great. You know, the moving and the eyes and everything. But the playing of chess was a little bit tricky. Steve Irvine, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? I'm here.
It's going great. Welcome.
You had a question about iPods.
Yes, sir.
Okay, my wife has had one for a while already.
Okay.
And I just got one.
Yay.
Can I run two separate, like, type of libraries for it?
Yeah, there.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Match our songs.
Absolutely.
And all that.
What'll happen when you plug the second iPod into the same iTunes, Mac or Windows, it'll say, oh, you got another iPod, eh?
Actually,
you should put a little picture of Steve Jobs saying, thank you. But it doesn't. But it does. It does notice that you have a second iPod. And what it does is it'll create a folder for that iPod, a separate folder. And you can have separate settings for it. And you can say, I only want... What I would suggest doing is having a folder for your iPod that is the only thing you synchronize with. So in the settings, you say, instead of saying synchronize this entire library, you say only copy songs that are in this folder. And then what you do, the folders are virtual. They're not real. So, you know, your wife can have her library, but the songs of your wife's that you want on your iPod, you just drag over to your folder and synchronize it up. So in other words, don't have two libraries. Unless you've already, if you've already set it up, okay. But don't have, you don't need two libraries. You can have the same library with all, the library is all your songs, both yours and your wife's.
Okay.
But you can synchronize different subsets of those songs easily by setting up a separate folder.
Like a subfolder.
Yeah, it's in the, exactly. And it's in the settings. So when you do the settings for that iPod, and each iPod has its own set of settings, when you do the settings for that iPod, it says, do you want me to copy everything from the list or just these certain folders? And you say, no, just this folder. And you say, okay, this is the folder I want to use. This is Steve's folder. And you can drag the songs you want into that folder. And remember, dragging the songs from the main library into your folder doesn't remove them from the main library. It makes a pointer in the folder. And so, you know, you can say, well, I like the Stones. Maybe your wife doesn't like the Stones. She can have her own folder, too, by the way. You drag all the Stones. So you have one main library. You can have one folder. If your wife wants to synchronize everything, fine. Or you can have two folders, one for your wife, one for you. And you drag the songs you like into your folder. She drags the songs she likes into hers. The iPod handles that very well. In fact, you can have as many iPods hooked up to a single iTunes library as you want. I know because we have about 18 iPods, it seems like, in my family. My kids, my wife's, mine. I have a couple, you know, one for travel. It works very well. 12, thanks for the call, Steve. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 1229 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
Listen to KFI live online 24/7. KFI AM 640.com.
KFI KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1-KFI. 1-800-520-1534. That's the number to call. We can talk about tech. I'd love to talk about it with you. Give me a ring and ask a question, make a comment or a suggestion. Larry in Poway, welcome to KFI.
Hi, I got a question for you that no one else seems to be able to answer, so I probably figured that you could answer it for me.
Well, I'll do my best.
Okay, I've got probably a seven-year-old Sony camcorder that's been a great camcorder all these years. When we record and play back through the TV, there's no problem with the picture. If we record to a DVD recorder and play back on that, that's fine. The problem is the LCD screen. It's real grainy. Is that because the crystals go bad, or is it something more internal?
Well, it depends. Grainy. When you say grainy, what are you seeing? Is it noisy? Is it, what does it look like? Does it look like some of it's not working?
Well, it's hard to explain. It's not like the heads haven't been cleaned. That's not the problem where you get...
Well, no, because you're getting good video out of it. So it's not... We know it's just the LCD.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just... It's something wrong with the LCD, and it's either that the LCD itself is damaged or the wires to the LCD are damaged. I mean, 7 years old on something that you bang around like a camcorder is a long time.
Yeah, it's been great for all those years.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's an analog camcorder. So the
yes, it is.
Yeah, the quality is not as good as today's even the inexpensive DV camcorders look much better. Secondly, they're much easier. If you have a computer, they're much easier to get the video into the computer because they're digital already. Are you actually capturing it to your computer from this camera?
Not to the computer, no.
Yeah. So you could do that. You need a FireWire card, but you could do that with an upgraded camera. It's certainly not worth fixing. Let's put it that way. The cost of fixing it would probably be more than the cost of buying a new DV camera. I mean, they're down to $200 or $300 now.
Yeah, it's. I finally found a website for a Sony. Does repairs, but gosh, they were out in Oklahoma somewhere, and they wanted half my cotton picking salary just to fix it. So
yeah, and what they would do is they would take off the LCD and they'd replace it. And you know, then it costs you a few $100. But boy, you'd have to love that camera an awful lot. Is it like it would have to be like a household pet? Because
well, it's almost become one.
Because otherwise, there's just economically, there's just no justification for fixing that thing.
Okay.
It's just old, and it's going to get other things are going to break down. 7 years, that mechanism is about to wear out, probably in all likelihood. And you're still taking analog video, and really the move is towards digital video in every respect.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, if you can continue to use it, you don't, you know, the LCD is not that important when you're shooting. You're able to get it out to a TV and you're able to get it out to a DVD. So you're able to, the video's fine. Okay. I would continue to use it, but be aware that you're probably going to start to fall apart soon. And when
when it does, we'll go get another
time
one.
To get a DV. Yeah, I agree. While you've got the camera, I would suggest, this is something that happens a lot, and it's happened to me, I would suggest transferring the data off onto a DVD or something, because what will happen is if that camera fails, you'll have no way to play those tapes anymore.
I see.
Yeah, and so those tapes are tied to the fate of the camera. I shot a lot of high 8 tapes. I don't have my high 8 camera stopped working. I'm going to have to go to a service bureau to transfer the data from those high 8 tapes now. So my suggestion is, as long as that camera is still working, you're getting a little hint that it's maybe getting a little long in the tooth, it'd be a good time to just make the effort of anything that you haven't yet transferred to DVD, you might want to do that.
Okay.
All right?
All right, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't have any quick fix for you. Undoubtedly, they'd replace the LCD. It could be the LCD. LCDs don't really wear out. But if you the way an LCD works There are liquid crystal cells, one per dot on the screen. And then behind the crystal cells, there is a fluorescent light. And the cells are controlled with a grid of wires. There's a wire, a horizontal wire, and a vertical wire for each cell. And they can the crystal is just a shutter, essentially, letting the light through. So the wire turns the crystal off and on, lets the shutter open and close. For color, you may have a red, green, and blue crystal, or just three cells. There are various ways to do it with filters. The wires can fail. See, I can't really visualize what's wrong with it from your description. It's hard to say, but if the wires can start to fail. The connector that powers those wires, more likely, might have failed just for the hinge of opening and closing that LCD. Eventually, that starts to go. You see that in a laptop, too. I suppose it's possible that the liquid crystals themselves could be wearing out. 7 years is a long time. Or it could be that whatever's driving those liquid crystals is wearing out. Obviously, the camera itself is working fine because you're able to get good video out of it. It's just whatever, somewhere along that chain, the viewfinder isn't working well. And if you can live with that, I would just, you know, live with it. But do transfer that stuff off because you're kind of getting a warning now. Eric, North Hollywood, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Leo. How you doing
today? I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Hey, listen, I had a question. Okay, I'm buying a new XPS M1210 notebook from Dell.
Yes, sir.
And I was curious. It's costing me about $1,700, but it's only got like a 1.8 gig hard drive, 80 gigabytes memory. And I just wanted to know, is it really worth the purchase, or should I get something lower?
Well, what are you doing? I mean, these XPSs are very nice notebooks. They're very lightweight. They're very powerful. Are you getting the media center or
it's media center.
Is that what you want it for?
Actually, I was doing a little bit of everything. I wanted to burn some DVDs, you know, have tons of music and school, basically, you know, young guy stuff.
Right. Yeah, it's good if you're taking it to school because you can watch TV on it, too.
Right.
and record TV. I mean, it's an entertainment unit, right?
Right.
You hook up good speakers, you've got everything you need. It's got a built-in camera, too, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, webcam. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
I like the 1210. I think that's a really nice laptop. Now, when you say, is it worth the price... Well, you can get a less expensive laptop. I think that's... People, I think, sometimes get a little too cheap on laptops, to be honest with you. You get what you pays for. And a decent laptop's going to cost you around... You know, it's going to cost you more than $1,000 and less than $2,000.
Yeah.
Unless you get something really fancy. Now, you're getting the $1,700 version. But there are less expensive ones, right?
Yeah.
What do you get for the extra money?
Well, I got the 4-year premium package just in case, you know,
okay.
Especially if I'm going to be taking around school.
That's worth it.
Yeah.
You got a better video card?
No, that's the one thing I wasn't able to get.
Okay.
But I can upgrade that, right, later?
Not later. You should do that in the purchase.
Wow.
Now, they use the 950, which is, you know, what's in my MacBook. It's in my Mac Mini. It's not a bad, it's Intel integrated video. So, you know, motherboard video isn't the state of the art. Are you going to game on this thing?
No.
Then it's fine. It does the media center part just fine. It's good enough, in fact, to run Vista. In fact, this Intel created this 950 with Vista in mind. They wanted to make sure it had enough capabilities to run Vista.
Right.
You can upgrade the laptop, but if you're going to do it, you do it as you buy it. It's not the kind of thing you want to go into. It'll be too expensive to do it after the fact.
Yeah, because that was a bad thing because I can't, you know, because of the limit I had.
Yeah, it got too. It gets too expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Well, how much RAM did you get? A gigabyte?
Yeah.
You said a gigabyte and an 80 gig hard drive, right?
Yeah. Actually, I think it was a 1 gigabyte hard drive and 80 RAM.
Vice versa, but okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, the problem with the laptop hard drives is they're all too small.
Right.
So you're getting the 80. That's good. You're getting a gigabyte of RAM. It is a Core 2, or no, it's a regular Core Duo. That's a nice laptop. I think it's a 4-pound laptop that does Windows Media Center. It's got the cam. You're getting the 4-year warranty. You get XP, right?
Yes.
Of course you get XP. Do you get Office, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah. You get the regular Office stuff.
Okay. So that sounds pretty good. I think that's about right. $1,700, that's about right. If you wanted to cut the price, you'd have to sacrifice some of that stuff. I mean, the one thing you might not need is Windows Media Center. You might just want XP and not Windows Media Center. But if you think you're taking it to school and you want to be able to... What Media Center does is it's a program that runs on top of XP that allows you to record television shows. It basically turns it into a TiVo kind of device. So if that functionality is important to you, then absolutely. But I suspect you pay a little more for it. I don't think you'd save much more than $50, though. So go for it. You know what? $1,700, that sounds fine. I don't know where I would cut. I really don't. I like those 1210s. I think those are excellent, excellent Windows laptops. 1248, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
This is Steve Gregory along the U.S.-Mexico border. Join me Monday morning for my special report on guarding the border.
On KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
1256 on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. All these shows, going back 270-plus shows, are available online at KFIAM640.com. Click my name, Leo Laporte, under shows, and then go to the official Leo Laporte website. That's leo.am. We've got an audio archive, and you can subscribe and get them via podcast. So you can hear the shows via podcast. I know I do have listeners all over the world doing that. We like it if you listen live when you're in town. But if you're out of town, well, I got an email from a guy in Portland, Oregon. So he listens to the podcast. He says, I'm sure people have thanked you for your help when they are in a figurative teeth-pulling predicament. I, on the other hand, would like to thank you for your help with my literal teeth-pulling experience. A little while back, I had to have my two remaining wisdom teeth pulled after putting it off for many years. Ooh, you don't want to do that. Ow. Well, you have to, but you don't want to. In addition to the gas, I chose to listen to a podcast of your KFI radio show to help soothe me during the extraction. Your calm voice and entertaining show got me through it with minimal discomfort. So if you're getting dental work while you're listening right now, relax. It's going to be okay. It really is. I'm looking at all the calls here, see which one's been hanging on the longest. Looks like Mike in San Francisco. Hey, Mike, welcome to KFI.
Hi, I have a Canon EOS Digital Rebel camera.
How do you like it?
I like it a lot.
It's great, great camera.
I scoot around. I used to have a Canon F1 and stuff years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like it. However, I'm running up against a... problem when it comes to money. I have a 70 to 300 telephoto lens.
Yep.
Which I like a lot because I go like to the races up at Infineon Raceway.
Oh yeah, it's nice to have a long.
Get you closer.
One. Yep.
I want to go to a bigger lens, and I can't afford like a 600mm lens.
No.
I've been looking at the Sigma 2X teleconverters, and I'm wondering how much, if any, they will. Degrade the quality of the photos when you're, you know, shooting out at the full extension.
It's the same, you know, in film and digital. It's the same issue. It's the poor man's way to get a longer lens.
Right.
And it doesn't give you the best image quality, but it does get you there. Right. I would prefer to see a lens, you know, but I'm an old-fashioned guy. I don't even like zoom lenses. And you can't buy fixed length anymore. I tried. Uh-huh. You know, I would buy a 600mm lens, not a zoom. But, no, you know, if you can't afford the longer lens, and I understand why you can't, you could use lens extenders. But, you know, I'd have to get an expert on to tell me what effect it has on the image.
Yeah,
it strikes me it's not as
camera.
Crisp.
I haven't been to digital camera info yet, but I assume they might.
Yeah, they might. You know, lens extenders are, it's the same on digital and film, I think. I just think it's not as crisp.
The one thing I thought of, because I always take the pictures at the largest size, but, you know, normally I'm only going to use them for viewing on the screen, or I might print out a few. So, I mean, I'm shrinking these from, 48x22
right.
down to 8x11.
Right.
Is that going to help crisp
yes,
it up, so to speak?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you're using less detail, so as you know, it'll look better. I've never used lens extenders. Maybe I'm being a purist. I'd love to get a real photographer on and tell us what he thinks. So maybe in the next hour, somebody will call and we can talk about it. You know, if you can't afford a long lens, it's the only way to get there, isn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 12:59. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
August 5th, 2006.
It's 81 in Fullerton, 73 in Laguna Beach, 81 in Hollywood, and 76 in Westchester. KFI's the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
I got Mandy working. I just want to say hi. Don't you? She sounds so... She's so nice. I love technology. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's what we talk about from now till 2 o'clock. High-tech stuff. Whether it's a personal assistant, a digital personal assistant who answers your phone, or home theater, camcorders, cell phones, MP3 players, computers, sure. The internet, of course. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. Dr. Dean Adel coming up at 2 today. But I'm going to keep taking phone calls till at least 3:30 or 4. So I want to keep those phones ringing. 1-800-520-1KFI. Keep the calls coming in. We'll keep taking calls until 3:30 or 4, as long as you keep calling. Let's put it that way. 1-800-520-1KFI. Dean Adel at 2. A fresh John and Ken, hot and fresh from 3 to 5 this afternoon. And I'll be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Did you see this? Amazon has started selling groceries, which is kind of an interesting idea. Now, I thought it'd be non-perishable because, you know, canned goods, I guess, and dry goods. But they even sell fresh goods like milk. You could buy a gallon of whole milk for $3.99 on Amazon. I don't know. I can only imagine what the shipping would be. Of course, I have Amazon Prime. I've spent the extra money. Well, this is, you can't use Amazon Prime for this. Too bad. Amazon, if I think if you spend $80, you can get free 2-day shipping on most products from Amazon for a year. But here's the interesting thing on this gallon of milk. People, I think, just have a funny sense of humor. You know, Amazon allows users to review products, and that's really useful. Frankly, I recommend it. Before I buy anything, I go to Amazon. Even if I'm not going to buy it from Amazon, I see what the reviewers say, because these are real people using the product. Well, somehow this, I don't know, this is one of those viral things where people are reviewing this gallon of milk. There are 426 reviews of this gallon of milk. So far, it's got 4 stars. And some of the reviews are funny. Here's one from somebody in Britain. He says, I purchased this milk from the UK. It arrived only 4 days after ordering, which was impressive. Now, remember, this is fresh milk. I was really looking forward to it, as it's not something readily available this side of the Atlantic since cow rationing was introduced following the mad cow problem. I used most of the contents up in the first evening, slicing it thickly and lightly frying on either side with garlic-infused olive oil. Oh! Overall, I can recommend this product, although I would not suggest its use to the elderly, particularly users of false teeth. Here's one. I purchased it, only 2 stars, didn't like it. I purchased this product on the assumption that it came from a cow. I'm 99% sure, however, the milk, quote, I received actually came out of a camel. A sham, says Bob Hope. 1 star. Tuscan whole milk is a sham, plain and simple. It is neither from Tuscany, whole, nor really milk for that matter. And I seriously doubt it's either a gallon. I have visited the, quote, dairy where the, quote, cows are, quote, milk. And let me tell you, do not drink this milk. I know this is obviously a joke. Some very positive reviews. J.P. Hamilton said, 5 stars, amazing, liquid gold. This is by far the most amazing milk ever. This truly is the nectar of the gods, a drink worthy of Thor the Mighty. Isn't it funny how on the internet things just kind of take off? And I don't know how people found this product and noticed that everybody was having fun with it, or why there are 426 reviews of it. Pretty remarkable. Let me see when the, let me show the oldest review. See when people started this little, silly little thing. First review was December 15th, 2005. So it's been going on for quite some time. And the most recent review, I think, is today. Of course, it just got on dig. Yeah, August 5th. It just got on dig, so it's good. Inevitably, there will be a lot more. I wonder if there's a limit. Like, how many reviews can they get on here? And then you get to review the reviews. You know, you can vote yes or no on how helpful this review was. Let me see if there's one particularly most helpful review. Not good for roof lengths. This one, 79 out of 80 people, or I'm sorry, 85 out of 91 people found this very helpful. I had a problem where my roof was leaking. I poured some Tuscan whole milk over it to seal it up, and it just flowed right into the hole and didn't do anything. I now have milk constantly dripping down from the ceiling, and it has stained the drywall as well. The milk trapped in the ceiling is now rancid and smells horrible. It has also induced a pest infestation problem. Do not buy this product. I suggest roof caulking or tar instead. I don't know. I don't know if Amazon's grocery experiment is really going to be a success, but it's sure generating some interesting traffic. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. Let's talk about tech. Christina Glendale, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hi,
I was
Christina.
Hoping you could help me with my TiVo.
Okay.
I have some shows that I have saved in my TiVo.
Yeah.
And they're taking up space.
Yes.
So I want to move them onto DVD.
Of course you do.
And I have a Mac, but I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, you know, there. And I wrote a book on this subject of hacking your TiVos. Leo Laporte's Guide to TiVo, still out there in the bookstores. The problem is, first of all, even with the easiest TiVos to hack, which were the original Series 1's TiVos, it's a major process to get it hacked so that you can get video off of it. Mm-hmm. But there is an easy way to get video off of it.
Cool.
And that is, if your TiVo, and most do, have an analog output, you know, a way to hook it up with a video connector,
mm-hmm.
you just need a DVD recorder or a video capture card on your computer, and you can just capture the video that way, and it's by far the easiest. What people are thinking is they want to get the digital stuff off that hard drive. It's already digitized. Why can't I just copy it? But TiVo doesn't want you to do that. The networks don't want you to do that. Movie companies don't want you to do that, so they really make that very hard to do.
Oh, well, boo on them.
Boo on them, but that's because they're afraid you're going to steal it. Now, how late model is your TiVo? Is it a Series 2?
I'm not sure. Maybe 3 years ago when I bought it.
It's probably a Series 1. So just so you know what's involved, the software is free. You download the software. You have to buy a network adapter card for it. You open up the TiVo. You install the network adapter card. You take out the TiVo hard drive. You install it into your computer. For this, you do need a PC. You burn a CD with a special Linux distribution on it, and you boot to that. You have to do that. If you boot to Windows, you'll ruin the drive. So you boot to the Linux CD, and then you use the utilities on the Linux CD to modify that drive, put some networking software on there. Then you put the drive, take the drive out of your PC. You're laughing already. You put it back into your TiVo. You seal it up, and you hope it works.
Sounds like a lot for me to do.
No, I wouldn't recommend it. But it turns out if you just take the analog output of the TiVo, it looks pretty good. The thing that you're going to have to deal with is, well, what do I do with this analog output? If you had a DVD, you know, one of those standalone DVD recorders, or even a VCR, it was designed to do it for a VCR, but it'll work with a DVD recorder. You just hook it up to the back, press record, and it records to the DVDs. If you don't have a DVD recorder, mm-hmm. in other words, if you only have one on your computer. Mm-hmm. Then you have to get a video capture card that will take the analog output off the TiVo and put it on your hard drive, and from there you can burn a DVD.
Can I do that with a Mac, though?
Yeah. There's a couple of companies that do this. The Formac makes one that's I like. It's Porsche design, so it looks good, matches your Mac. FORMAC.com. And then there's also Elgato, which makes... These are video capture cards. ELGATO.com. And they make the TVi. Apple stores sell these. Or I'm sorry, iTV. Apple stores sell them. You could probably get them at anywhere that sells Apple products. And it's just a little box that hooks up via FireWire to your Mac and will suck the video out of your TiVo, and then you can burn it.
Cool. Can I ask you one more thing?
Certainly.
Were you ever a disc jockey?
Oh, for years.
Yeah, you know you.
Do I sound like a DJ?
It's just a lovely voice.
Oh, you're very kind. Yeah, no, I started 30 years in radio this year. I'll be celebrating. And I started as a DJ in college, worked as a DJ for a while. And then I found out the dirty little secret of DJs. I thought, you know, college kid, oh, cool. I get to spin records, play my favorite music. It'll be just like, you know, a party. Then I found out they tell you what to play. And worse, they tell you to shut up. And I don't like shutting up, as you might notice. So, you know, when the slogan was light rock, less Leo, I knew this was not the job for me. That's when I, and so about in 84, about 20 years ago, I became a talk show host.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah. I love what you do now.
Thank you so much.
Very lovely.
Oh, you're wonderful. Thank you so much, Christine. I really appreciate the kind words. I owe it all to my Heil PR40 microphone. I've used many microphones for years in radio. And most radio stations used an ElectroVoice microphone called the RE20. Now there's the RE30. And it's that long, if you've seen DJs, you know, Howard Stern or Don Imus, if you've seen them on TV or you've seen pictures, they almost all of them, it looks like a long tube with slots on the side. And some stations use Neumanns, which are the kind of the state-of-the-art microphones. But I met a guy about a year ago named Bob Heil. He's an old sound guy. He got his start doing rock and roll sound for The Who. He actually invented the quadraphonic system that The Who used in Quadrophenia. In fact, it's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was just inducted to the Hall of Fame a couple of months ago. He created the vocoder that Peter Frampton uses on Frampton Comes Alive. He did sound. He introduced the Grateful Dead to high-quality stage sound. So this guy's, you know, one of the biggies in rock and roll sound. He retired, became a ham. Maybe he'd been a ham all along, but decided hams need better microphones. And so he started building microphones for hams. And then I think people started to discover these microphones. Heil Sound, H-E-I-L Sound. And I use a Heil Sound PR40 it's the best mic. I won it last year at the Podcast Expo. I'd never heard of him. I won it. It was the prize for the best podcast of the year. And I just love this thing. And I think nobody ever said anything nice about my voice until I started using this. So it ain't me. It's the microphone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 118. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. You might want to jot that down because I'm going to continue to take calls at 1-800-520-1KFI. After I get off the air here in about half an hour, Dean Adell will be here on the radio, but I'll still answer calls right through to about 4 o'clock. So keep those phone calls coming in. 1-800-520-1KFI. Let's head back to the phones. Lots of calls. Thanks for your patience, Al San Diego. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Question on some guidance on getting a new laptop. I've got a Dell Inspiron 7000.
Yeah, I think it's time for a new laptop. Yes.
Yeah, it's 98. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a 1998.
Yeah.
8 years old.
Say so.
So that's why I'm looking into new ones. It's the other one, 6.4, and then it's got a DVD drive, which was advanced for those years. But anyway, what I'm looking at was now maybe on a Toshiba, and the one I had my heart set for a few months might have been superseded now, and that's the crux of my question. The one I was looking at, the satellite, has 2 gigahertz of memory. Sorry, 1 gigabyte of memory, 2 gigahertz drive, and 120 gigabyte, hard drive. And the question revolves as well, the new ones are the so-called Core Duo.
Yeah.
But they have 1.83 gigahertz processor, which is a little bit slower than the other one.
It's better, though. It's better.
Exactly. That was my question.
Yeah.
Is it more important to go to Core Duo and forget about the slight difference in speed?
It's still faster.
Ah.
Here's
okay.
The thing on these. You cannot look at clock speeds anymore.
Okay.
Intel completely changed how it designs its chips.
Okay.
And it started with a Pentium M, which the one you're looking at is a Pentium M, and then the Core Duo is essentially still a Pentium M.
Sure.
But what happened is the clock speeds are going down as the chip is getting more efficient and faster. It uses less power. It gets more done. So the Core Duo, even a 1.8, will be faster than a Pentium M2.
How about that? And now the processor I was looking at, and their T2300, 2350, this one has a 2400. Is that good enough?
Yeah. I mean, it really depends what you want to do. In fact, we're going to see the next generation Core chips, the Core 2, come out in laptops soon. I have to do some research. I was talking about this a little bit earlier.
Right.
They're announced, but I don't know when they're going to start selling them. And let me see if I can find that out for you.
Sure.
Because if you could wait till then, you would see a substantial increase in speed. The Core 2s, they're about 50% faster.
And they're called what?
It's the Core 2.
Core 2.
Yeah, you'd think they just came out with the Core Duo. What are they doing the Core 2? Well, Intel is really... you know what? Let's take a break for news. Listen on the air, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the chip world, because it's really a revolution. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 129. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
It's about poop.
This is Steve Gregory along the U.S.-Mexico border. Join me Monday morning for my special report on guarding the border.
On KFI AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
138 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. Phones are ringing, and we'll keep them ringing till at least 3:30 this afternoon. Hey, if you call till 4, we'll go to 4. 1-800-520-1KFI. It's a marathon. Let's go to John in Granada Hills, our next caller on KFI. Hello, John. Welcome.
Hi, Leo. I've got a question about voice chat over the LAN for gaming.
Okay.
Basically, I've used two programs, and I'm not having a lot of success. TeamSpeak, Roger Wilco.
And Ventrilo.
Information?
There's also Ventrilo as a third.
What is that?
Ventrilo, which is the one I like. Ventrilo.
Okay.
All of these work the same. You have a centralized server. It could be on your LAN, which is actually the best way to do it. If you're only doing LAN gaming, then run the server locally. Or you can use an external service that provides the server. Ventrilo server is free. You can download it and you can install it on one of the PCs on the LAN, preferably one that's not gaming. And then everybody logs into that server and uses Ventrilo in the background. What problems are you having?
Well, I'm getting an echo problem and a delay. I'm pretty sure it's with the microphone or speaker.
Well, there are a couple of issues. You know, chat during gaming is really the same as voice over internet. It's just like Skype. It's just like Gizmo. It's just like Vonage, really. It's just that it's dedicated to gaming. And so because of that, the way these work is they have a central server that everybody who's playing the game logs into, and then it relays the stuff around so that everybody can hear it. There are two problems you get with voice over internet of all kinds, including these gaming servers. One is the echo you talked about, and that usually comes from an open speaker. You got to make sure you're wearing headphones that don't feed back into the microphone, or you're going to get echo. The second problem is lag, and lag compounds the echo problem because the delay in speech means that it sounds like you're Lou Gehrig at the Yankees game saying, today,
yeah,
I consider.
Exactly.
And that's, if you're getting that, it's because there's an open speaker somewhere. You know what? People often are lazy, and they don't wear headsets. They use their...
I have two headset mics.
Okay, good.
Set up for that.
You don't have open speakers in the house, right?
I set the settings to make sure that those are off, but I'm not sure I'm accurate with completely having them off. The speakers are off.
Yeah, and then to turn it down a little bit, if it's echoing, it may be because your headphones are too loud. I know, I'm deep from all this, 30 years in broadcasting, and so I often turn my headphones way too loud. And, you'll hear DJs will do this, just squeals into the microphone. So you got to make sure that if there's echo, it's coming from somewhere. Now, it can also be coming, sometimes it'll come from the server. That's a badly configured server. There's something wrong with the server. The lag, though, comes from the fact that you're logging into a server that's geographically distant. So your voice has to go to that server. Everybody else's voice goes to that server, then come back to you, and there's going to be lag. That's why if you want to get rid of the lag, and I think you might even solve your whole problem, is the best thing to do, you're saying you're playing within your own network. Everybody who's playing with you is...
I'm not even online.
You're not online. Okay, perfect. So
quality programs, we're trying to just utilize them with the headset and mic.
My recommendation is Ventrilo, Ventrilo. It's absolutely free. You download the server software. It runs on one of your machines. It'd be best to make it a machine that is not involved in the game.
Exactly.
And you log into it from the other machines, and I think you'll find it does a very good job. If you're still getting lag, you might want to change the codec. Ventrilo allows you to, they have something like a dozen different ways you can do it to speed things up. And if you're finding there's a lot of lag, then maybe a faster network would be a solution as well.
Yeah, so, I'm not doing anything complicated. I mean, I realize you can have multiple servers and all kinds of channels.
So you are running a team TeamSpeak server or a
Yes, actually, one server, and then we just go in as a client.
Okay.
The local
area
network. But
and how
it
fast
shouldn't
is
be complicated
your,
by shouldn't, internet or anything.
No, it shouldn't. How fast is your network? Is it a 10 megabit, 100 megabit?
I'm not really sure.
See, that could be an issue.
This wireless network, and I've got...
Oh, it's wireless. Try wired.
Really? So
oh,
if I run a cable from point A to point B...
Oh, much better.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do you have time for one quick question on another topic?
Certainly.
Okay, a recommendation from you for an animation program. I like to dabble with cartoons and animation, but I haven't found anything that I could do with like a HyperPen type of a format.
So you want to do...
Write on a tablet and do cartoons that are, you know, somewhat quality.
2D or 3D?
Just 2D.
But you want to animate them?
Actually, two levels. I'd like to do just cartoons like you read in the paper, or I'd like to process later when I get better with animated.
There's a really great program, and I think it's Mac only, called the Comic Book Maker. That is just, or what is it called? It comes with all the new Macs. I might even have it here. Let me see. I think I own it. But it's Mac only. Your Windows, I'm sure.
Windows, yes.
Comic Life, that's the name of it. Wonderful. This is, if you're a Mac user, I know I'm not helping you in any way right now, but if you're, so apologies for this, Mark, but if you're a Mac user, look at Comic Life. It'll take your existing pictures. You can make them look like a comic. It does all the layout. You can do the balloons, the bubbles, and everything. I'm sure there's something similar on the Mac. I'll have to look and see. I think it maybe was called Comic Book Creator. It seems to me that's the name. Now, animating is a little bit more complicated. It's funny because that's how Flash and Macromedia got started. The guy who started the company, Mark Cantor, created exactly what you want, which is a 2D animation program for making like your own little cartoons.
Right.
But it became big, complicated Flash. And so it no longer does what you want it to do, which is create animations. This is one I'm going to have to do some research on because I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are. Maybe I'll ask my friend Alex Lindsay at the Pixel Corp because he would probably know.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your help.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And if as a listener who knows or somebody in the chat room, we're looking for Windows, a comic book or 2D cartoon creation software that he can use his tablet with. And even better, one that will allow him to do animation. We do on Call for Help, the TV show I do in Canada. We have a regular, Mike Hogue, who's wonderful. And he is a trained animator, learned in Disney, knows his stuff, and now does stuff in Flash. And it's actually a great segment because he comes in and shows us the way the masters have for generations been doing animation, you know, Cinderella, Snow White, that kind of stuff, and then shows us how to do it in Flash. But I have a feeling that's more than Mark was really willing to get into. Flash is a, you know, there's a lot to learn when you're learning Flash, but certainly that is a great way to do it. You can, in fact, if you want to see Mike's work, jinxtheblackcat.com, jinxtheblackcat.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. And you can see what you can do with Flash animation. I mean, this is animation, I think, every bit as good as the best cartoon animation. And it's all done in Flash. The advantage of doing it in Flash, of course, is it's portable. Now you can put it on a website. You can send it to people. And it's very small file sizes. But it is a bit, it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a program. It's a lot to learn. I guess if you were looking for adding to your skill sets, I mean, if you are an artist and you could do Flash, you will never lack for work. I can promise you that. Good Flash animators are in great demand these days on the net. And if you're good at it, you can write your own ticket. 147, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
You tip your waiters, you tip the valet, so why not tip your favorite radio station? Call the KFI News tip line. It's always open at 323-CALL-KFI.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, taking your calls at 1-800-520-1220. 1 KFI. I'm going to keep taking calls after 2. In fact, for another hour and a half or 2 hours. 1-800-520-1KFI. Shubi came up with a really cool 2D animating program called Toon Boom. Toon Boom Studio. T-O-O-N-B-O-O-M. And it's it sounds like exactly what Mark was looking for. Not cheap, $300.
Yay!
But it looks pretty cool. I'm sure there are other programs like this. And I haven't tried it, so I don't know how difficult it is. They do have a 30-day trial, though, so I think that sounds like the place to go. Just to see if it does what you want it to do. Wayne, Texas, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Wayne!
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. Y'all taught me just about everything I know on computers, from the screensavers and call for help.
Oh, my. Thank you.
And now you're responsible for me being in debt for my first Mac.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry about that. I remember buying my first Mac on a Macy's credit card. It took me about 3 years to pay it off. So I'm with you there.
Well, I have a question about that Mac. I got a MacBook Pro.
Okay.
2.16.
Oh, excellent.
Parallels installed.
Top of the line, baby. All right.
2 gigs of memory installed.
Yes, sir.
And I want to install Windows XP using Parallels.
Yes.
Here's the catch. I don't have a full copy. I only have my upgrade, and I only have my Windows 98 upgrade left.
That's fine.
I don't have a full copy anymore.
So what'll happen? Oh. Well, see, what happens when you install Windows is it first looks to see if you're upgrading an existing copy. And then it realizes he doesn't have any copy on here. And so then it'll say, well, you know, you bought the upgrade edition. You need to verify it, and it'll ask you to insert an earlier version of Windows. I think the 98 upgrade might work.
Seems well, the problem is that I can't get it to read. I can't get 98 to read. Usually with my PC, you just pop it in the second CD.
Well, you know, you'd have to pop the old one out, and you'd have to pop the old one out. You know what I did to install? Actually, I had trouble with Parallels, and I don't know if they fixed this in later editions. This was with the beta. But okay. It would not read my CD at all. It'd get halfway through the install and die. So I actually made an image of the disk and installed from that, an ISO image of the disk and installed from that. Because Parallels will install from an ISO. So what I would suggest if you have a PC is make an ISO image of the XP install disk. And you can actually have 2 CDs. Did you know this? You can have 2 CDs with Parallels. They're virtual anyway. So you can say, oh yeah, I have a D and an E drive. Make the E drive be the ISO of the Windows XP install. And then you can leave the Windows 98 disk in the CD drive, the Mac CD drive, which will be seen as the D drive. That might work. I think you have the larger issue of, can you upgrade Windows XP? Can you use that upgrade edition with a Windows 98 upgrade disk?
Yes, you can.
I've
never had a problem with
it. All right. So that's what I would suggest. So there are a number of free programs that will take that Windows XP disk and make an ISO of it. And actually, I decided this is a good idea. I keep worrying about losing my XP disk. I'm just going to use an ISO. And now I have an ISO of the XP install disk, and that works fine with Parallels. If you look in the Parallels setup, when you first, before you boot into it, you can change the setup. And one of the things you can do is it'll say, do you want to use an ISO as a CD? It's a virtual CD.
Do you have a recommendation on a program to create an ISO?
I use Demon Tools, which is a good free program. I think there's one called ISO Maker. There are a number of programs that'll do this. And of course, if you have Nero or Roxio, any CD burning software, will also create an ISO.
I've got Nero burning ROM. So.
Oh, Nero will do it. Yeah, just say I want to make an image of this disk. Yeah.
And just I'm kind of new with Mac. I'm still feeling my way through their directory. Where would I put the ISO image of Windows XP?
Doesn't matter. You'll tell it where to find it. Parallels makes a disk, a directory, so it might be easiest to put it in there, which I think is in the library directory, but it doesn't matter. When it asks you, when you're setting up Parallels and you say, I want to use an ISO, it'll say, okay, find the ISO. And you just browse around the disk, just as you would in Windows.
It'll find that, and I guess it will automatically look.
It uses that as a CD, and then you can put 98 in the CD-ROM and make that the D drive. So make sure you set up Parallels before you start the install to have 2 CDs. One is an ISO and one is an actual hardware CD.
Okay.
All right.
That
give it
pretty
a
much answers the question. Could I ask you one real quick one, just Mac specific?
I'm out of time, but if you can do it, it's about 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Airport Extreme over, say, Belkin or Netgear.
No, I just get the Belkin and the Netgear. They're cheaper.
That was it.
No reason to buy Apple gear. It's more expensive. It's the same exact stuff.
Okay.
But it does help to have a PC to configure those Windows-oriented routers. If you've got a PC, absolutely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Dean Adell's coming up, but I am going to continue to answer calls, so please keep the phones ringing. 1-800-520-1KFI. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.